Bottle Episode is a spirited podcast about spiritus libations. Those under their country's legal drinking age should turn off this podcast and go do their homework.
Hey there, folks, and welcome to Bottle Episode, the professional bartender's guide for the cocktail enthusiast. Mm-hmm. I'm Lan.
And I'm Elise, which I just wanted to say, I don't know, I'm
yeah, go for it.
Already in my head.
Go off,
about
gang.
Just the fact, I mean, if you've tuned in before, you know that Lan is a professional bartender.
Yes, I'm
and that I am
bartender.
The enthusiast. Uh-huh. But we've dropped
we used the intro off.
We
used to do that.
Yeah, so I just wanted to clear things up for anyone who might be new.
I'm the professional bartender, and Elise
and I'm
is the
just
cocktail
I'm
enthusiast.
Just the girl.
She's just a girl.
I'm just here, having a good time, knowing more about the cocktail that we're drinking. I know more about the history of
than
the pot
me.
of the of the cocktail, and you know more about how to make the cocktail.
I mean, like, I didn't have to look up the recipe. I just like
you
knew
just
it.
Like knew it.
I just like knew it, so I didn't have to worry about that. So
yeah,
like,
you're like I just
stuck
know
on an
this.
Egg, dude. What no. cocktail are we talking about?
We're talking about the Gold Rush.
The Gold Rush.
The Gold Rush, which
the official cocktail of the 49ers, maybe.
Maybe, which you thought it was from the 1800s.
I did. Yeah.
Guess what?
It's not?
It's not.
Great. That's awesome. Tell me all about it.
So first, before we get...
We should talk about what it's in it.
Yes. Okay. Knowing nothing about the drink and how it was made and where it's from and everything, how did you make this?
I made it with 2 ounces of bourbon, 3/4 of an ounce of lemon juice, and 3/4 of an ounce of 3-to-1 honey syrup.
There you go. I was going to ask. What was a honey syrup ratio?
Honey syrup is 3-to-1. That's going to give you that nice,
yeah, which is
silky texture.
If you look it up, if you look up the recipe across the internet,
it just says honey syrup.
Sometimes, and on a certain whiskey website, it says it has a honey syrup recipe that is incorrect. It says 2 parts honey, 1 part hot water. So there's misinformation out there.
I mean, you can use 2-to-1. I think it depends on the honey you're using, but really what it all comes down to at the end of the day is the viscosity. Like,
but
I did 2-to-1 at first.
For the true
not
Gold
the,
Rush experience,
okay,
if we want to get into why.
Let's get into why.
Okay.
But first,
yes, okay,
I will just say, I initially started with 2-to-1, and I just, like, I looked at it, and it was too watery.
Water. Yeah. So, yeah.
So I added another part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which of honey?
Like, I have made ginger honey syrup in the past, and
what has been your ratio?
Just ginger and honey, and literally the water content from the ginger.
Oh, that'll
turns
do it,
it
yeah.
into syrup. So, like, no water.
Yeah.
So, if you want to make honey ginger syrup, nothing.
You can literally just juice ginger and then sweeten it with honey.
Yes. Or you just slice up ginger and boil it for a second.
Yeah. I mean, the way we make our ginger syrup at Daydreamer is, like, we take ginger juice. Like, we call it sweetened ginger juice because we are literally taking ginger juice and sweetening it, like, adding sugar.
Which, what type of juicer do you need to juice ginger?
We have a Breville here at home, which is not the most effective way to juice it. You can juice ginger with a Breville. I have, and I will again.
Okay.
I would recommend a cold press juicer.
Okay.
Like one of those spirally boys.
I don't know about that.
Cold press juicers are great for, like, very gingerly pressing the juice out of something. It's it's basically like a spiral,
it, like,
cone
press
that you
cold,
like,
press.
It presses it kind of slowly, but it expresses, like, a really good amount without, like, really shredding it.
Yeah, I have tried to juiced ginger, and it was kind of a nightmare.
Yeah, it kind of sucks to juice with a Breville. You can do it, and I've done it before. I'll do it again, but it is not like the easiest way to do it. There is
guys,
so much
hair.
Yeah,
we have cat hair on our mics.
We haven't recorded for a second, and so we haven't like moved our microphones, and the cats have just been like brushing.
Oh yeah,
all
my
up
cat
on it.
Agatha spends all day working with me, and she like has a root around the desk that she comes onto my lap on, and she rubs against the microphones every single time. So they're like basically cat scratchers.
Yeah, I hate it.
it's kind of gross, but pretty cute.
My chin is being tickled by cat hair right now. Don't get cats, guys.
You should get at least two or more cats.
Yeah, five cats probably. We only have two.
I also did in the last 2 weeks get a tattoo for our cats. So
you did,
I have cemented my cat lady-ness directly into my skin.
Right under
I
your
can't
skin
deny it anymore.
But yeah, the Gold Rush, 2 ounces of bourbon, 3/4 ounce of lemon juice, and 3/4 ounce of honey syrup. Fun fact, before you get into the history, because I really do want to hear about it, because obviously I don't know it.
Yes.
This was like the building blocks for the penicillin, which we've talked about before, which is scotch, lemon, honey, and ginger. So all kind of the same
vibes. Who made the penicillin?
Sam Ross.
Sam Ross.
Sam Ross based the penicillin off of the Gold Rush using scotch, ginger, and that was like the main thing. And then he added a little bit of Islay scotch over the top to give it like an extra.
When did he make the penicillin?
I want to say 2009.
Okay.
Sam Ross worked at Milk and Honey, which was the bar that Sasha Petrosky owned and ran in the Lower East Side of New York. They opened several different locations throughout his life. He passed away in like, I want to say the early 2010s, mid 2010s. But before that happened, he closed the initial location of Milk and Honey, and some of his proteges opened Attaboy in the same place. So you can still go to the initial location of Milk and Honey. And when you look into Sasha Petrosky, you'll see that literally every bartender that exists today, like any prolific bartender, has been influenced by Sasha Petrosky in some way. And in terms of like his style of service, the way that he treated cocktails, the way that he, like his intentionality of service.
Yeah.
He was kind of like the like archetypal, like prime bartender. Mm-hmm.
How many degrees of separation do you think like bartenders that are really in it have from Sasha?
I mean, I have two.
Yeah.
Like,
but that's what I'm like, do you think it's like 4?
I mean, it depends.
I think,
I mean, I worked at the Roosevelt Room. Justin worked with Sasha at Half Step in Austin. He helped open.
Yeah.
Half Step. So like I literally have 2 degrees of separation from Sasha and I've never met the man. Like I never met the man.
Yeah.
I never like got to be around him, but I've met so many people who have met him.
Yeah.
And like I've been influenced by so many people who spent time at his bar.
Yeah. Which is that's why I asked the degrees of separation, because I feel like the like 7 degrees of separation is a thing that could connect anyone. But I feel like it's probably a lot. Less than that.
I mean,
just by like, how many people
truly,
have worked with him and
truly,
how many people have worked with those people. And
yeah, I think they're like, I mean, and even if I hadn't worked at Roosevelt Room, it would be 3 because I now work with Reggie, who like Reggie is my co-lead bartender at Daydreamer. He worked at Diamond Reef that Sam Ross opened, worked right next to Sam Ross, who worked with Sasha. And Sam Ross also invented the penicillin. So like my coworker worked with the guy that invented the penicillin. So like it's a very small community.
Yeah.
When you like, especially once you get to like a certain a certain echelon. No, but like
a certain level of interest.
A certain level of interest. Yeah, like say. I think that once you get to a certain, yeah, a certain level of interest, a certain level of like professionalism, you get to a mm-hmm. point where you're just like, oh, this world's very, very small, mm-hmm. and everybody kind of knows everybody. And if you don't know yeah. that person that you're thinking about, you know somebody who does.
Yeah, like, I feel like even as like again the cocktail enthusiast, I feel like if I went somewhere. And like, obviously I'm married to you. So like, I know more people that are actually like working places totally. And like your coworkers and stuff. But I feel like if I got to know the bartenders in this town or any town and then was like, went to another city and was like, oh yeah, like I love this person at this bar. They'd be like,
yeah,
we were roommates.
Yeah, it's truly like it's wild. Crazy. Like, I mean, what is your favorite bar in Nashville? The Fox, exactly. And guess who the initial beverage director at the Fox's roommate was in New York?
Who?
Reggie.
Oh.
Yeah. I would love to have him on the podcast. He doesn't like public speaking, so he's like wary to be on the podcast.
It's a very different.
But my closest coworker at this point. It's like was roommates with the guy that opened like that helped open our favorite bar in Nashville and like it's really like that shit's wild.
I will say if you don't like public speaking, I feel like podcasting has honestly maybe made me a worse public speaker because I have a confidence with a microphone but because I was talking to them. Yeah. But then when I go in a real place with a microphone, I'm like, oh, it's just like my podcast where I talk into a microphone for a long ass time. And then I'm like, this feels very, very different.
It's definitely different.
Oh, no.
I would love to get Reggie on the podcast because I truly enjoy working with him.
The best thing about a podcast.
I feel like I've never really worked closer.
Yeah.
With anybody than I have with him. Like Maddie, friend of the pod, recurring guest of the pod. And the ghost of the pod.
Wait, what was he the ghost?
He was the ghost of the pod, yeah, for one day.
Was he the ghost of that spy guy?
What spy guy?
James Bond.
James Bond? I don't think so. Maybe. We were talking about the Vesper, so maybe. But I mean, Maddie and I worked really closely together, but like, we weren't like he was my boss.
Yeah.
And so like there was like a slight degree of separation there. Which Maddie, if you're listening to this, I love you and come over to dinner soon. But Reggie and I, like we literally work like side by side. We're on the same level. And I don't think I've had that with anybody before.
That's awesome.
And I would love to have him on the podcast. Reggie, if you're listening,
come record a podcast with us. We can always not publish it.
Away. Yeah, you can just come talk into a microphone and we can just not.
We'll edit it out.
We cannot publish it.
Edit it out.
Edit it out. Okay. Tell me about the cold brush.
I like this article because it specifically starts with someone Googling themselves.
Love that.
Which is always an interesting thing to do.
Yes.
Is it ever really that interesting for me? No. Maybe. But like, are you ever like, do you ever Google yourself and you're like, what picture comes up first? Like, is there some weird like Facebook from when I was in eighth grade thing that is weirdly the most popular picture?
Yeah. I mean, like back when I was trying to do music for a living, I definitely did Google myself a little bit more just to be like,
yeah,
is anybody talking about me? No one was ever talking about me. In my Facebook, I'm pretty sure was like my top thing or like my website.
Yeah. Like, well, cause like I just Googled myself and all my Instagram, my LinkedIn, my now deleted, I off my phone anyway, X and my TikTok. And then someone else. I am my SEO.
You are not the only Elise Nye in the world. We know this because
I'm Elise.Nye on Instagram. And there's this like lovely woman.
However,
yeah.
You are the only Elise Nye on PlayStation.
Crazy.
Look her up. Her PSN is Elise Nye. And we are playing Baldur's Gate
I've
together.
I played maybe 2 hours of Baldur's Gate.
Yeah, we played it and we did. It was really fun.
I designed a very fun character.
We spent most of the time of us playing in character design.
Because then there was
scenes.
Like a god person. And then I was like, you were like, you don't need to worry about this that much. And then I was like, but it's so fun.
Yeah, character design is
tattoo
so
fun. Should I put on?
Yeah, first? I mean, it's very, very fun. Anyway, we play D&D.
Yeah, we do. So speaking of happening upon a cocktail and Googling ourselves, are you familiar with
the
name?
Tell me how this is going to connect.
Are you familiar with the name TJ Siegel?
Yeah, no, TJ Siegel. My best friend from the beach.
Oh, yeah.
From summer of 2005. Yeah. TJ Siegel.
TJ.
Harrowed by Katrina.
Trader Joe's Siegel from the parking lot. Okay, wait. Did you have parking lot seagulls?
No, I'm from inland.
You're right.
You're from a coastal city.
I am.
Which
a coastal town.
Yeah, she's Elise's from like a coastal Connecticut town, which isn't as quite as glamorous as it sounds. Like, I mean,
it
they
is
have
if,
a beach,
it, okay,
but it's like on the Long Island Sound.
It's in the Long Island Sound. It's very glamorous if you're the CEO of Pepsi, but if you're anyone else, it's like cute.
A town.
But like,
I'm from a suburb of Jackson, Mississippi. So no, we didn't have seagulls.
Okay.
We had crows. And ducks.
Here we have grackles.
Yeah, man.
Oh, the parking lot foul of the different states that we've lived in. Anyway, so TJ Siegel was getting ready for a job interview and he was like, shit, what am I good at? What am I even good for? And so he Googled himself.
Tell me what he's good on. Good for.
He was like, let me just Google myself to see like what people are saying or if it's just going to be my Instagram.
What was he interviewing for?
I think he was hunting for a job. It doesn't specify.
Just a job.
A job.
Hello. Hi, Indeed.
I'm TJ Siegel, and I'm looking for employment.
I'm TJ Siegel. I'm a human, and I would like a job, please.
What am I qualified at? Let me Google it real quick.
I would like to be paid in shiny things and
please.
Or fish.
Both work. I too will accept shiny things as payment, honestly.
I will also accept twigs for nest. I mean, nest egg because I invest.
So he Googled himself because he was like, I could use some help with some talking points because, you know, can't we all?
Yeah.
And he found that all of the results were about this one drink called. The Gold Rush. And so what happened is he always went into Milk and Honey after his job. Surprise, y'all just heard a little bit of the backstory of that, which is why I was like, yeah, keep talking about this.
Okay.
So he went into...
It wasn't because we don't have more runway for this episode.
No, it was because I was like, this is... that's why I kept asking questions, because I was like, wow, everyone will know about the history of Milk and Honey and Sasha Petrosky and the impact of that place and...
Not to put too fine a point on it, like Sasha Petrosky and Milk and Honey has had more of an impact on modern cocktails than anyone or any place... Like, you hear a lot about people like Dale DeGroff, and like, Dale DeGroff is great.
Mm-hmm.
He's a very nice man. I've met him a few times. I've learned things from him. He's told stories. A very nice man who very much influenced cocktails and like brought, like, Dale DeGroff's the guy that influenced Sasha, and Sasha's the guy that now influences all of us, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's the one. Like, Dale learned about...
Dale DeGroff is, like, grandpa cocktail. And Sasha Petrosky
is,
like,
daddy
cocktail.
Yes. Like, Dale learned about metal tin-on-tin shakers that most bars use now from Sasha. Because Dale went to...
What did
Milk
people use
honey.
Before?
Glass on tin.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
And some places still use that. And it's a perfectly viable thing. But like, Sasha used it because one, more durable, two, was better at like chilling. And I think he kind of developed that from what like I've read. That
interesting. Like, that's crazy.
But Dale, from like books I've read, Dale found that technique at Milk and Honey from Sasha Petrosky.
Did he make it up?
I think he might have had him fabricate it. I don't know.
Wild. A genius.
Truly a genius, yeah.
So TJ Siegel, not to be confused with an actual bird, he was a man.
What? This whole time I've been picturing a bird in a top hat.
Yeah, he was a real man, and he was childhood friends with Sasha.
Okay.
And so they both worked in New York, and after he would get off, he'd go to Milk and Honey, and he'd order a bourbon sour on the rocks without egg or garnish, which I could ask, does that a bourbon sour make?
What is a bourbon sour? I mean, like, so a whisk, like, let's boil it down.
Let's go back
bourbon whiskey. So a whiskey sour is 2 ounces of bourbon, 3/4 of an ounce of lemon juice, 3/4 of an ounce of simple syrup, and an egg white. He asked for it without egg white. So just 2 ounces of bourbon, 3/4 of an ounce of lemon, 3/4 of an ounce of simple syrup served on the rocks, as opposed to served up like a traditional whiskey sour would be.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got no egg on the rocks,
mm-hmm.
no garnish. That's the cocktail so far. It's not, not to get ahead of you here, but like it's
get
not
ahead of
a
me.
Huge leap to be like, well, this might be interesting. This might be more interesting with honey as opposed to simple syrup.
Yeah. But that was like what he had. That was his like his drink. He was like bourbon sour, no egg, no garnish, put it on an ice cube. Great. And so he goes in and orders this, or is like about to order this, but Petrosky's sitting there being like, I just made this honey syrup because I've been playing around with something called the honeysuckle cocktail, which pop quiz, do you know what that is?
I don't know what it is off the top of my head, but I know I have a book right behind you that tells me what it is.
It's basically a daiquiri made with honey.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. So he was just like, I've been playing around with this honey syrup. And then Siegel was like, holy shit. What
he
if-
was like, mine?
Yeah. He
a good Finding Nemo joke there.
He snatched it out of his hands and flew away. Which has happened to many a French fry in my hand. Anyway.
In your like, hand specifically.
Like, I like if you've never been personally like bullied by a seagull.
I've been accosted by a seagull in my day.
One time I caught a seagull.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell me that story right okay. now.
So pause on the honey syrup. So I went to a beach in Rhode Island with some friends in high school, and one of my friends was like, you can catch a seagull if you lay under a beach towel and like put some crumbs or like some food on top of it. And then I did that and I caught a seagull with my not quite bare hands, but with a little bit
slightly gloved hands
of like the like
poorly gloved hands.
Like, you know, the like extra crumbly, like nature's
crumbliest
granola bar known to man.
Yeah.
And then
Nature Valley.
Yeah, Nature Valley, in a beach towel. I just laid there, and then I caught a, like, they all came around.
And then what did you do?
I let it go, because what, I don't
what
know.
Like, my question would have been, why would I want to catch a seagull?
To see if you can, because somebody, you're going to be talking
about
seagulls.
You were so busy thinking about whether or not you could, and you never stopped to think about whether or not you should.
No, because now, anytime we talk about seagulls, I can be like, I one time caught a seagull with almost my bare hands. And then people are like, what? And it's a great story. And if I ever get stuck on a deserted island, I have a couple ideas on how to survive.
Is seagull meat good?
If you're starving.
Does it matter if you're hungry?
They're like garbage birds. They're garbage ducks. Same with pigeons.
And ducks is good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've never had it. You don't eat meat. No.
So.
I'm talking for me in an emergency situation.
Yeah.
I'd probably give myself food poisoning if I ever caught a seagull.
Yeah.
And
well,
was on an island. And that's why they'd be like, she was able to find sustenance, but
she tried eating the feathers, which we
had really
considered
bad diarrhea and died of dehydration. Anyway,
she was like, is this how you eat meat? And just ate the feathers. And that was not good for her.
I was like, I can't measure the internal temperature of this.
You don't bring a meat thermometer everywhere you go?
No, I'm a vegetarian.
Oh, you're a vegetarian. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. But you do, right?
Yeah, of course. I carry it in my back pocket right here.
Okay. Yeah. He's showing me.
Yeah. I have a meat thermometer in my back pocket.
At like home.
Like all good meat eaters do. In our own home.
You never know.
You never know when you're going to need to measure the internal temperature of something.
Of some seagull meat.
Or anything.
But basically what happened is they were just like shooting the shit. And he was like, I'll have the usual, please. And then they were like, but what if the usual had honey? And so they made this drink. And apparently, okay. And then it was very important because Sasha Petrosky used his regular sour formula, which is 2 ounces of spirit, 1 ounce of juice, and 3/4 ounce of sweetener, which maybe isn't that important. But
was that different
or the same as what you did?
No, I did 2 3/4, 3/4. And I think that I can explain why I like that for certain things. 2 ounce, 3/4 is, I think, good for like a daiquiri or a gimlet, but not necessarily for a sour.
Okay.
Lemon juice needs a little bit more stuff in it.
That's fair.
I think lime juice can carry a cocktail a little bit more than lemon juice can.
Yeah.
Lemon juice needs more help, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I'm arguing with the late Sasha Petrosky here, but I think that's the general consensus.
Yeah.
But 2 1/3/4 is good. Like, yeah. And honestly, it depends on the palate too. Like, if you like a super tart sour, then I might mm-hmm. say, yeah, let's do that. But like, I think that a generally equal ratio on sours is good. Sours implying lemon juice as opposed to like a gimlet or something mm-hmm. like that, which would imply lime juice. But I mean, 2 1/3/4 makes sense. I mean, it just depends on the palate. It's not like offensive to me.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's how he did it. So there are different ways to measure.
Who am I to argue
citrus
with the person that I've been like singing
praises
the
guy
of for like
he's
a
daddy
minute.
Cocktail.
He's
so.
Daddy cocktail.
So basically they swapped out the simple for the honey and the drink was just like good. Like Siegel says, it was right the first time. And he called it the Gold Rush. And he said that I like names that bring a feeling or a thought or a chuckle, not names that have a hidden meaning or connection to the origin of the drink. So no connection to the Gold Rush was not created in the 1800s.
well,
he
you
was
know,
just,
egg on
like,
my
I
face.
Think they were just like liquid gold, honey.
Yeah.
Gold Rush.
And it's a very nice like golden color as well.
Yeah. So basically like they were just shooting the shit, swap one ingredient out for another, which is a pretty classic cocktail.
That's a common tale. Yeah.
Like
I mean that those are my favorite bar story, like cocktail origin stories.
Yeah.
And I think that any stories that aren't that are kind of fake. Like at the end of the day, like, obviously, like, I mean, I have stories that aren't that, where I'm like, I want to achieve a thing and I'm going to work on this thing. But those aren't classic cocktails. Those are cocktails for a menu at a bar. And that's a different thing, where it's like, but this, the, like, I've said this once. I don't know if I've said it on the podcast, but I've said it once. I'll say it again. Like, the classics, the ones that people remember, they don't remember it because it was like the most inventive drink they've ever had. They remembered it because it was really good. And then they learned how to make it at home. And then they told their friends how to make it at home. And then it ended up in a book where somebody else learned how to make it. And like, the key to the classics is repeatability more than anything else.
Like, that makes sense.
And that's why, like, we're not seeing more classics being made now, because, like, a lot of, like, it's 2024. Most ideas, like, most flavor combinations of repeatable things have already been come up with. So, like, I think if we are going to see more classic cocktails arise in this day and age, we're going to see it with, like, new ingredients that are cropping up. So, like, that's just my opinion on classic cocktails. But I do think that, like, that's the story, right? Like, those stories are the ones that I find believable, are the ones where it's like, guy walks into a bar, asks for this, but change this.
Yeah.
And if then you're, like, you get a whole new cocktail.
Yeah.
And then somebody's like, well, this is great. You got to name this. And then you do. Yeah. And then you have a new cocktail.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, like, a bourbon sour, you change it to a bourbon honey sour, and you've got the Gold Rush. And then you take the Gold Rush, and you're like, what if I switch the bourbon to scotch?
Yeah.
And I split the honey with some ginger, then you've got the penicillin. Like, there's a natural progression for all of these cocktails.
Which, like, it definitely says, like, it goes on, a lot of little, like, things, but, like, they mention that, and, yeah, it's definitely, like, it, like, is part of the lore of the penicillin, for sure.
Yeah.
Because I think, like,
and it makes even more sense, knowing what I know now about how Sasha created this cocktail, that Sam Ross created the penicillin, because he was like, well, my boss has this cocktail.
Yeah. And I think
let me build upon his cocktail.
Yeah. And it came from a drink of, like, a service industry person ordering their regular, like, no fuss version of a cocktail. And then people started ordering it because it's, like, a little interesting but easy. And then I do want to say that the 3-2-1 honey syrup ratio was concocted by Toby Maloney.
Toby Maloney, yeah.
You know that guy? He was the first bartender that Petrosky hired, apparently.
Toby Maloney. And let me actually look this up.
Toby Maloney is also, like, a really good name.
Is that a name that's familiar to you?
No, it's like... Toby Maloney. It just, like, has the Y's at the end. Like, it's like phony baloney. But his idea was to add as little water as possible to make it pourable while retaining the most honey-like qualities. And I feel like, honestly, honey syrup is something that's really nice to have, even for, like, tea or
coffee. Making honey more pourable, I think, is just a good thing
kind
to
of
do.
Nice.
All right. Yep. He is who I thought he was. I mean, I knew he was connected with one of the things that we love.
What?
But I wasn't sure if he was connected with both of the things that we've loved. Toby Maloney was present when, at least the story goes, that Toby Maloney was present when Sam Ross also came up with the Paper Plane, which is another very famous modern classic cocktail. And the story goes that Toby Maloney was working, who did work at Milk and Honey, was working on his new bar, Violet Hour, in Chicago, which is a bar that we've been to and loved, and was, like, kind of shooting the shit with Sam, and was like, and Sam made a cocktail with bourbon, Aperol, Amaro Nonino, and lemon juice, and MIA's Paper Planes was playing. And so they're like, well, we might as well name it this.
Okay.
That's at least how the story goes. As much as I remember it, Toby Maloney also is a co-owner of Mother's Ruin, which is another bar that we love.
Yeah.
So Toby Maloney, again, like just
all
a couple,
the guys.
Like, and again, like New York at that time was like kind of a hub for all this shit.
Yeah.
I mean, I worked with Naren who worked at Pegu Club, and like the all these guys also like they worked at Milk and Honey and or Pegu Club.
Mm-hmm.
And like they learned what they know now at those places. And unfortunately Pegu Club has since closed as well, but we did get
the chance to go there. Yeah, on that really cold
January night. Yeah.
Like it was like the blusteriest day. Yeah. And I've maybe thought about the word blustery in two
scenarios.
It was scenarios,
an extremely blustery night. We went there.
And that night.
We went there with our friends, and then we went to Existing Conditions, which is also closed now. And is now the location of Mace, which is owned by the same company. Mm. But Mace used to be on... I love bar stories. Because, like...
Yeah.
But, like, let's talk about Mace and when we went there.
When did we go there?
We went to Mace, which used to be, I believe, on 13th Street.
Okay.
We went there and sat in front of my friend Cameron Winkleman, who is a pretty prolific bartender in New York at this point. He was the lead bartender at Mace for a while. He was like a director at Behind the Barrel, which is a thing that I really enjoyed doing with Wild Turkey. Mace is a really, really good cocktail bar in New York that used to be on 13th Street. And now it's on 9th Street Existing Conditions is or used to be. And it's also where we sat about 2 weeks before the pandemic.
Okay.
Hit.
That was that place. I was like, I don't remember the names of places.
Yeah.
Okay.
We sat there
and
about 2 weeks
were
before the pandemic.
Telling
hit,
us about how
and he was telling us about how we should like, get him on the podcast.
We should.
I'll reach out to him.
It was he was talking about how the like he
his
had
friends
these
in Chicago
in,
had gotten or
what,
not
Seattle,
Chicago, Seattle. Sorry,
that like whole hotel like closed, and he was were like, all
like
that
got fired.
Seems a little dramatic,
yeah,
right?
Just like a, it's
right?
just like a it's just like a flu, right? And then 2 weeks
then
later, all
we
of New
all...
York was shut down.
Oh,
we were like, that
boy.
Seems like an overreaction. Like, and then seems... like all of us lost our jobs and everything. Shut
and
down.
Everything was terrible.
So, you know,
so that
we
was
were
crazy.
Wrong.
Okay. Yeah. No, I very vividly remember
vividly
it because it was one
moment.
Of the, I think it was the last place I went out to.
Yeah.
Before that was like the last establishment I went to before, like for the next like 2 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Probably Jesus.
Yeah, right about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But Mace is now where Existing
okay.
Conditions used to be,
cool.
which is the place we went to right after we went to Pegu Club.
Mm-hmm.
New York is a cool place.
It is. I like it a lot.
I'm glad we don't live there
Same,
anymore.
That's what
but
I was
like
just about to say.
I love New York, but I'm glad we don't live there anymore. But New York was the place to be if you were going to be a cocktail bartender in like 2005.
Man, honestly,
and I was worried about Hurricane Katrina in Mississippi.
What was I thinking about? I was moving. I moved from, or no, maybe that was 2006 that I moved. I was just in fifth grade. We had a fake town in my school. And I was,
oh, cool.
I was the mayor the first time.
Cool.
So I had the most money of anyone. It was great.
Well,
that's what I was thinking about in 2005.
Yeah,
but honestly, to be a cocktail bartender or just to be in New York in 2005, like what was like the Strokes were
a thing,
the biggest like they were in their heyday. Like what was going like I that would have been a good time. But I was 10 years old, being the mayor of my. Elementary.
It was also a time when you could just like you could switch simple syrup for honey and it would be a whole new cocktail and it would blow people's minds.
Yeah.
And it takes so much
like a
more
nameable
than that now.
Yeah.
Like And I'm not lamenting the current situation of cocktails. Mm-hmm. I think that we are in, like, we saw the cocktail renaissance, and that mm-hmm. was in like the late 2000s, early 2010s, like as we were coming of age.
When did the term mixology come into play?
A long time ago, okay. Longer than you think.
Okay.
It was, I don't remember the exact date, but it was early in terms of bartending goes. In terms of, that was a bad statement. In terms of bartending goes, I'm going to lean into it. That was early in terms of bartending goes, but it was like a derogatory statement about bartending in a newspaper. Like, mixologist was a derogatory statement about bartenders.
Okay.
And we could have like kind of taken it back, but we all just kind of hate it anyway. So,
but it's interesting because, okay, there's a graph of, I love an etymology graph of like,
love it,
of when, how like the popularity of words. So it looks like it came into play in like the 1850s.
Yeah.
Popped around 1860.
Like,
and
it came into play during like the early
like
stages
when,
of
like,
bartending.
Actual bartending. And then it
cocktail
picked up again around like 1900, dropped off a little in the 1920s. We're a little hush hush about it. and then like plateaued until the 1990s. And then it fucking skyrockets. And between the 1990s and now, it is like a straight line upward. And I was just curious of like, because like, I feel like the word mixologist has been around for like almost 200 years at this point.
Yeah.
But I was curious to see if like the 2000s had some pretentiousness built into it, or if
it,
because people
did.
Were, which I'm sure, like, I mean, there's like, you know,
there's a certain culture of pretentiousness and like a generous read on the pretentiousness surrounding cocktails that I will give to that time, mm-hmm. Is that people were really precious about this profession, because I, like, in a way that I very much am.
Mm-hmm.
And this is coming from somebody who will very vocally say that I think that term is bullshit. Like, and I think that it's going, like, it has very much fallen out of fashion with bartenders.
Yeah.
But I think that why it might have run, like might have come back into fashion during that time, is that it's a problem still to this day that, like, when you tell somebody you're a bartender, somebody might be like, well, what do you really want to do?
Mm.
Like, what's your real goal? It's like, no, this is it. Like, this is what I want to do. And saying you're a mixologist sounds a little bit more official.
Yeah.
But I'm resistant to that. If we say like ologist,
mm-hmm.
like, it's like, I'm a cocktail scientist.
Do,
and I
okay.
think there are cocktail scientists.
But like,
out
I
there.
Will, I will say that I am an avid listener of the podcast Ologies,
mm-hmm.
and which is basically, I mean, most of them are actual scientists. They're like, yes, I have like a PhD in like
degree.
Fish, and I like literally study fish all day or whatever they study. But like, it is very much like the study of something. And so like, some of their earlier episodes were like a cosmetologist, like and like anything that was, and I think they did have a mixologist episode, but they were like using it in the way of like the study of the practice of the like in like learning of this thing, and which is maybe the truest, purest form of
and I do think like I'll be somebody who will admit that like I do think there are quote unquote mixologists out there.
Yeah,
there are people like, there is a guy named Dave Arnold who is a renowned, I would call him a mixologist, because he's not a bartender.
Hmm.
He's not like, he owns bars and he is a student of the science of cocktails. And like, he's a student of like, he's somebody who studies how to do the science of cocktail better. Like, mm-hmm. he does that for a living, and like he studies cocktails, and I would call him a mixologist, because like, what else the fuck do you call him?
Yeah.
Because he's not like he I don't think he ever was a bartender. I mean, maybe he was, and maybe I'm wrong, but like he's not known for being a bartender. He's known for being a cocktail scientist.
Mm-hmm.
He's known for creating equipment for bartenders. He's known for like writing books about like the like scienciest shit that we do.
Yeah. Like,
what do you call him other than a mixologist? I like to put stuff in cups. And I like to put stuff in cups that tastes good together.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to do it for people that like it.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to make a space where people feel good and happy, and like, and I put thought about the stuff I put in cups,
mm-hmm.
and I try to mix things in cups that tastes good.
Mm-hmm.
But like, my main goal is to create a space where people feel happy and good.
Yeah.
And welcome, which is why like if somebody wants to call me a mixologist, like I'm not going to be and we've talked about this on the podcast before, but like, I don't want to be the guy that's like, don't call me a mixologist. Like, no, like that in itself is defeating the purpose of being a bartender, which is creating a welcome space. And if you say something like that, you're going to make somebody uncomfortable. And that's like not our goal.
Yeah. But basically all I was getting at is I was curious if like the the initial skyrocketing of the phrase came along with that cocktail renaissance that
happened for sure
in the 2000s coming out of the dark ages or whatever. But
and again, then, my generous read on that is that people wanted to be taken seriously.
Yeah, but then coming off of that, I was just curious of like, okay, we've gotten to a point where like all of the earlier recipes and like the early 1900s, 1800s cocktails, like we've traded honey out for simple syrup as much as we can. All those one for one substitutes are kind of taken. And so like, do you feel a little more like you're mixing things? Or like, what if I add a little dash of this and a little dash of whatever? I don't know if that is what it was, but like just the idea of searching for something new that maybe is very difficult to get to.
I mean, yes, but I still don't consider it like, I don't consider it a science.
I think the idea of ology of as being a study of something and a practice of something is nicer than calling it a science. Like it's the study of something. So you're practicing the study of drinks, and like you're a student of that, and I think that is.
I'm actually gonna read something.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that came across my feed. Jim Meehan posted this a couple days ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's in his book. It's behind you.
Mm-hmm.
Jim Meehan is the owner of Please Don't Tell in New York, and he owns a couple other places. I think he lives in Portland now, so he owns like a place in Portland.
Mm.
It's a quote from Sean Muldoon,
mm-hmm.
who is quoting Sasha Petrosky, because when Jim Meehan published his book, The Bartender's Manual, Sasha Petrosky had already passed away. So instead of quoting Petrosky directly, he quoted Sean Muldoon, who was there when this was said.
Mm.
So, at Connoisseurs Club back in Belfast in 2008, Sasha Petrosky posed a series of questions to our audience. Quote, what's a good customer experience in a bar and how do you measure it? What makes a customer go away thinking tonight was a great experience? Some suggested service, while others said ambiance and drinks. Sasha, whose bars were renowned for cocktails, singled out drinks and told them they were only one element to a great experience.
Mm.
He said, I would say if you have 10 different metrics you're measuring a bar on, the drinks are only 10% of what makes a great experience. And that, I think, tells you, like, we're always trying to come up with good new stuff,
mm-hmm.
but we're less worried about that. I think the best of us.
Mm-hmm. I would agree.
Way less worried about a drink being new and exciting, and way more worried about the rest of it.
Yeah, I'm very easy to trick. If you're nice to me and you give me something that's like very normal, and then you're like, this is a sparkly...
Hi, hello. This is a bar that only serves classic cocktails.
And then you're like, you're the best.
But we're
thanks
really,
for
really
in.
Nice
we're
to some- you.
I'd be like, I will go there a million times over somewhere that like... And like, I will say like, I think I have at this point a decent palate that I can tell you...
Hey, Elise, I would agree with you.
I feel like I can tell you, I feel like I'm a good note giver on cocktails at this point.
Yeah. I feel like you've helped me refine my cocktails in the past. And will continue to in the future.
But like, I feel like I have a decent palate when it comes to cocktails. In a way of like, I can also separate myself, my own personal tastes from... If a cocktail is
totally
balanced, I mean, and I'd be like, I would not order this, but I can tell you that it is a good drink.
Yeah, there have been many times you've told me that exact thing.
And
I'm like,
or
well,
I'll be
you're
like,
not my target audience.
Which is, I'm like, this is good, no notes. I wouldn't order it, but someone will and love it. But like, I also don't think my palate is refined enough that... Like, it has to be, would have to be insane for me to be like, you were a bitch to me, but I'm going to come back. Like, I probably, like, it would have to be, like, what would that drink have to be?
I mean, we've talked about this, this so many times on this podcast. Yeah. Like, we've talked about a bar that I will not name.
Yeah.
In Nashville that we went to so many times. And
flip
they
a
always,
coin. May or may not be the drink that I ordered, but.
Always got our drinks wrong. The drinks. Sometimes they got them right and they were just bad. But you know what? It was a great vibe and they were always so fucking nice
cheap.
To us. The food
was
cheap.
I was like, I'm not
and
gonna
really
say
good. Like we just had a great time there every single time we went.
They had really
even
cute,
if we had shitty cocktails.
The design of the place was really cute. Like
and we went there time and time again because they had all the other elements because again, cocktails and
it's
good.
Like it is honestly
it's literally
probably,
only 10% of it. Like
if everything else is at 100%.
Yeah.
Like
well,
I'll go to a mediocre, like if a place is fine, like the drinks have to be pretty good.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, no,
but like
I'll go to somewhere where I'm like, you can shake me up a decent drink.
It's truly so true that like a drink only has like you. The drinks are only so important
mm-hmm.
and you can compensate for mediocre to even bad drinks by having the most incredible vibe, by mm-hmm. having just the nicest bartenders, by having just like incredible service, by having just like a really good space to be in. Like mm-hmm. all of these things are what make a good bar and great drinks is
mm-hmm.
only a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good vibe
that leads to good good people to be with. Like you all of a sudden strike up a great conversation with other people and
good drinks.
Like, yeah,
is maybe but, the smallest part of it.
Yeah, I don't think it's something you should overlook.
No,
but
like I mean, I think that the best place, like you should never overlook any part of a good experience and good drinks.
Like drinks would have to be honestly really bad. To be the make or break part of somewhere.
Exactly. I mean,
everything else is going to be the part that makes it or breaks
like,
it for me.
Tell me what your favorite place in London was, or one of your favorite places in London.
It's
a leading question. I know you know where I'm going with this.
Like my favorite, the one that I always lead with is like cocktail. What was it?
Cocktail Trading Co.
Because I looked it up and I wasn't thinking about it, and I wasn't thinking that the description on Google could have been sarcastic because I'm an American, and I'm like, oh, and it was just like a very like
a very serious cocktail.
We're a very serious cocktail bar with very like seriously executed. Like we like take our business very, very seriously, and like are like to, and I'm like,
and then we walked into a fucking pub
with.
And then we went with crime-themed
drinks with, that like, came in like lanterns
and like all this stuff. And the cocktails themselves were good.
They were good. They were not like oh god, this is disgusting. Like it's all gimmick.
No, I enjoyed
it. It was like
my
these
cocktails,
are good drinks. They weren't great, but they were like so fun. They were good, and then they were so fucking fun. And the bartenders were also very hands off.
But they were very fun.
They were funny. And because like I specifically remember I ordered the DB Cooper one.
Yeah.
And I forget the drink was a normal drink and a normal in like
normal
a mug. But they came over with a coffee pot and they were like coffee or tea. And I was just like, coffee? And they poured the cocktail out of like a coffee, like a coffee mug, and because it was a plane, so they were like trying to like recreate the scene of like being on a plane for DB Cooper, and it was just like so funny. Like every drink was a joke. They had "Would You Rather" on the menus, so it was like, and I was with you and my sister, who like you're the two like two of the people that I converse with most naturally, and could just jibber jabber for a million years. But
it was just like a really fun vibe.
It was really fun.
Like, again, like the cocktails weren't like and again, I'm not putting Cocktail Trading Co. on blast. I'm really singing its praises. Like the cocktails weren't the best cocktails I've ever had. I don't remember being like, wow, this cocktail is the best tasting
flavor wise or like groundbreaking.
But I remember every cocktail,
and it is one of
just so cool, and the vibe was so good. It felt like stepping into just like any London pub and then getting an insane drink.
Yeah. And like it's one of the first places that I recommend, and it is the number, like there are other places like Seed Library and like a couple others that like were really, really incredible, like Bar with Shapes for a Name, and there were others that were just so good.
I mean,
so
I'll
good.
Shout out Common Decency. Shout
Common
out
Decency,
Liana, who's been
yes,
on the podcast.
Friend of the pod. But like, I just had such a good time, and it was so silly and goofy and just like fun.
I can't wait to go back. That's where
I'd be like, that would be a great first date spot.
Oh, totally.
Because you would have, if it was a good date, like you'd have such great conversations. Like there were conversation starters built into the experience. Like it was just so fun. Like I just had such a good time.
So again, like, and even though like maybe the drinks themselves weren't, and again,
but they weren't,
if you're listening to this,
to be,
like I'm not,
but they weren't
you on
trying
blast,
to be like, we the, have the most the new most cutting age edge cocktail. Yeah. They were like, we're very super serious, we promise. And then they were the funnest.
They
bar
were like,
we
know what we do very well. We make cocktails and they're good. And then we also have a vibe and it's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that's the, like, just no, like realizing that that was the most important thing, I think is what made that place so memorable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a place that I'll be thinking about, like, if I never get to go back, which I think I will.
Yeah.
I mean,
my sister
now
lives
that
there
your sister
now,
lives there so. And also like
in London, not at
in at, London. Yeah. At Cocktail Trading Co. But like we'll make it back to London, and I'm certainly hopeful that it will still be open
hopefully.
At that point.
If it's like, not, I'm going to have some beef with UK.
And when we go back to London, we will make a point to go there because we had such an incredible time.
And it was in Shoreditch too, right?
Yeah, it
which
was in
is
Shoreditch.
Like my favorite neighborhood of London.
So like, but I guess all of this to say, I don't remember where we started with this conversation. I guess
10% of the actual recipe of the cocktail being the make or break.
And like, I'm always going to try to make the very best cocktail possible.
And
I'm
you should.
I'm always going to do my best to make the cocktail as enjoyable as possible. But I'd rather you hate Like, I'd rather have you order a cocktail that you hate and then you come to me and say,
"This fucking
man,
sucks.
I really don't like this cocktail." Like, yeah. Why, like, and I may be super happy with that cocktail. I may love it. Other people may love it. But mm-hmm. I'd rather have a guest come to my bar and say, like, order a cocktail, come back to me and be like, "Hey, I actually just really didn't like this." And then I get to be like, "Oh, well, let me find something you do like, and let's have a conversation. Let me get to know what your palate is. Let me get to know what you like. Let's figure out what you didn't like about this and find out what you do like, so we can find the best cocktail for you."
Yeah.
And then, like, the person that comes to me and says that and hated the menu on the cocktail,
yeah,
is going to have a far better experience because I paid attention to them.
Yeah. Like, and again, like, going back to the Fox, like, as a fresh 21-year-old who panic ordered gin and tonics, like, having the owner of the bar, Kevin, who
shout
is
shout out to Kevin. We love Kevin.
But, like, having him come up and being like treating me like a person who should have been there and was just like, "Welcome in, like, so glad you're here, like, welcome to the club, like, let's get you situated with what you want." Like, I went there regularly because of that.
Yeah. I mean,
having known nothing, like, I could have just gone to the bar upstairs and ordered a beer.
Literally,
but I love that place because I felt so welcomed.
And also, literally the third guest on our podcast, Nick, mm-hmm. was like,
and yeah,
my like bartending inspiration. Like, watching the folks behind that bar and, like, talking to them and knowing yeah. very, very little, they didn't make me feel dumb. They actually made me feel like I knew more than I did.
Or they'd explain stuff. They were so happy to explain stuff to you, or, like, yeah, like, help you understand something or show you something.
There are very few bars that have made me feel
the drinks were also
way.
Fucking good.
Really, really good.
But there were also other bars in Nashville that had great drinks, but I did not feel like they were accessible to me as a 21-year-old.
Yeah. There were bars that we went to after I started cocktail bartending, mm-hmm. where we just didn't feel at home.
Yeah. And that was just, like, I felt so comfortable. So,
yeah.
Shout out.
There are very, very few bars that have captured that exact magic for me where mm-hmm. everything clicked.
Yeah. And I was, I saw that through, like, very, very fresh spring
but
chicken
like,
eyes. But
I think,
still,
I, like,
st- even going thinking, back, thinking, it's still
yeah,
great.
I mean, thinking back
and
to
it. And
they
have drinks that are still surprising
there, like,
and interesting.
But, like, I would say, like, what are, for me, and we're coming up on time.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah. I think we could just call it after
but,
this.
But I do want to ask you, because
yes.
I can think of, like, two other bars off the top of my head that captured that exact, maybe three. I'll say three that captured that magic for me as a guest. And for me, they are Panda and Sons in Scotland, in Edinburgh. Watching that team.
For a different reason.
But they captured a very, very similar magic for me. Like, okay. Watching that team work and their hospitality, like, towards us, all of it was just, like, very genuine and good. Mm-hmm. And, like, I think that as a fresh 21-year-old, mm-hmm. or in Scotland, a fresh 18-year-old, like, mm-hmm. sitting there and watching them do what they did, I think I would have been captivated in the same way
yeah,
that I
yeah.
was at the Fox. Another
That's
place
fair.
Like that was Dante for me.
Okay.
Like watching Irene bartend, who mm-hmm. Irene is a dear friend. If she weren't a lawyer now, I would invite her on the podcast. And maybe I still should.
And we ex professional.
Yeah, yeah, I'll reach. Honestly, I should reach out to her because I really, really miss Irene.
What do you really want to do?
she's a fucking lawyer now. But
it's so
like watching
okay.
Irene behind that bar, and or
it's
like,
so interesting because I think we have very different answers for this question because you. You talk about it from a very bartender perspective. And yeah. I love those bars. those are great places.
Mm-hmm.
But like when I think about how I felt at Fox, like what was the name of the bar in Ridgewood? Paradise Lounge. Paradise Lounge is an incredible bar.
It was an incredible bar.
Lounge felt
$6
like $6
daiquiris. Do you remember that?
I remember it being sure a great deal. And
I'm pretty sure
the
daiquiris were literally $6.
It was great.
And they were like made with Don Q. I love that.
Bartenders were great. I feel like we had great conversations with people at the bar.
Yeah.
Incredible decor vibe, very tropical. Very like you go in there and you like are there.
Yeah.
Very friendly bartenders. Just like good drinks.
Totally.
Affordable drinks. Like it was just like
as poor people in New York City. Like a $6 daiquiri, a good $6 daiquiri.
A place that that's a place that I think of that was just like, again, so welcoming and like so it hit so well on so many of those categories that I'm just like, that was a perfect place. I'm trying to think of other ones.
For me, it's a little different.
It is. But I'm thinking of like where I can go. I could walk in and be myself to the bartender. I'm going to feel so welcome to them. I don't have to put on a face. I don't have to like pretend to be something. Yeah. I can go in.
Dromedary was that for me.
I was going to say those two were.
Or not even a young bartender. I wasn't bartending at that time. I was just a sad boy.
I went there less
and they were
than
so,
I went
so
to
nice
Paradise
to me.
Lounge.
And I went there and like, then I brought all my friends and we did trivia every Tuesday. Like, I remember Dromedary was a very, very formative bar for me. And they just rebranded and like it's now like Dromedary, a queer bar.
Mm.
He basically, Michael passed off, I think he essentially passed off ownership to like the bartenders.
Hell yeah. That's really cool.
I think he just opened a new place that actually my friend who I worked with at Dante, I'm pretty sure is working at, James, who used to work at Dante,
okay.
is now at like
cool
a bar that's getting a lot of that Michael owns in Bushwick. I don't know if this is listenable at all. But
I don't know. Either way. But like all that to say, we have different things that we look at for most like.
Well, let me say my last one.
Yes. What's your last one?
Nomad in New York.
I never went there, so I can't.
You never
speak
got to go.
That. Nope.
Yeah, the Nomad in New York was a very, very cool place, and just like it was an extremely busy bar.
Mm.
Like, tons of people came there, cocktail nerds, finance guys, like, and they fielded it all.
Mm.
But they still took the time to like really give people they took care of service industry people.
Mm-hmm.
Like they took the time to give like service industry folks like a really good time, and that really meant a lot to me. But that the like a huge bar with like a lot of stuff going on, and just like watching that team work was very, very cool. And the mm-hmm. the level of hospitality they showed, I think, was very, very cool.
Yeah. But yeah, Fox in Nashville. Paradise Lounge for me in my very specific experience in New York.
I would never take that from you.
Wait, okay. The other place that I really Paradise Lounge and Jupiter Disco.
Jupiter Disco was so cool.
because I honestly don't know if I have a place that I am not otherwise connected to through you or friends.
Yeah, that's fair.
If there are places that I go to a lot and feel very, very welcomed, I'm like, my husband is making the drinks right now. So I might be slightly biased.
Yeah.
Or like, I love all these guys. Like,
yeah. I mean, like, or like I went to Jupiter Disco
maybe,
a couple times with you, but you also went like more by yourself or with your sister.
Here, Drinkwell, actually.
Drinkwell, yeah.
For Austin.
Oh, incredible.
I will say that. And I do feel like I know a lot of people and I have walked in there with friends and it's just like, hey! And they're like, what is happening right now? And I'm like, hey! But Drinkwell, I feel like, is that of Austin for me.
Totally.
Hard
agree.
But I also loved Jupiter Cisco. And it was like,
Cisco was great.
It was so,
I wonder if that place is still open.
I don't know, because it was fucking dead during the week, which was so funny because I would like,
they also had a bonkers happy hour. I'm pretty sure their martinis were $6.
It was insane. And I remember like asking my friend to come deals, with y'all. Like meet me on a Tuesday, and literally we were the only people there. And then on the weekends, it was insane. Like I remember, but right before COVID, like
Jupiter Disco walking is still
through,
open.
Wow. Okay. Everyone go to Jupiter Disco. I remember right before COVID walking through
a
crowd
at 6
there.
6 p.m. tomorrow.
And
unless tomorrow is Monday or Tuesday for you. They're closed on Mondays and Tuesdays.
Oh, okay. Okay. I was like, what?
For whoever's listening.
And right before COVID, one, that was the last night out that I went to before COVID, other than the show that
I didn't go.
Because, and it was great. Like, I went out with my sister, and like, my sibling wasn't in town, and like, we had a whole bunch of friends, and we were all dancing together. It was really fun. I got drunk onion rings at the bodega across the street. It was amazing.
I was
invited,
and I didn't go because I was tired.
And I don't remember if it was
clubs
that time or another time that I walked through there on a weekend right before COVID, and I got someone's like, I was just walking and I like caught someone's fingers like in my mouth. And gross. I was like, ugh. And I was like, how did this happen? And then like, I thought about that for a while, especially once COVID hit, being like the good old days.
When I was just like gross, just and like, not like, man, I need to get tested.
I
now.
Need to like, yeah, like, I don't know, go to the doctor. But yeah, that was a place that was so good.
Yeah,
and it
was
space
great.
Themed.
And they were always very, very nice.
And they were really, really nice. Yeah, it was good.
Well,
anyway,
this has been Bottle Episode.
It's been Bottle Episode.
We didn't even take a break this time.
We didn't. We just talked straight through it. We're like, okay, maybe the hack to figuring out the second half is not having a second half.
Yeah. The second
you just
half,
never stop the first
the
half.
The second half is the friends we made along the way.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway. Listen to World is Burning.
We are on a hiatus, so it's the perfect time to
get
caught up on our backlog. We have over 80 episodes now, so check them out.
Also, sorry that we missed a week. It was a really busy month for me work-wise. Mm-hmm. And so we just didn't have time, like, Elisa's schedule and my schedule just didn't line up and we didn't have time to record. But
did you miss us? Probably not.
Did you miss us? Maybe. Is anyone
It'd be
listening?
Really, really nice.
Hi, hello. Are you there?
You are. You know a couple of you guys
some,
are listening.
We know some folks listen. We would love if more folks listen. So share with your friends.
Share on your story.
Share on your life. We love you all.
Give us a 5-star review.
Yeah.
On all the platforms.
Any and all. Thank you all so much for listening. We really, really appreciate it. We also just really enjoy making this. So we appreciate that we're not just shouting into the ether, but we would love to be shouting into less ether. So share it with your friends.
Yeah. It would just be us talking to each other otherwise.
Yeah.
Like what?
We just do every day.
Couch talk.
Thank you all so much for listening. We'll be back very soon with a guest.
We swear.
Yeah.
Hold us to it.
Pinky promise. I will see you soon. Love you all.
Bye. Love you.